unfortunately differential calculus and spectral algebraic geometry. I probably should have done better with the title, because this word calculus kind of indicates that I'm going to tell you how to do formal manipulations of symbols in order to do effective computations, and I'm not going to tell you anything like that. So maybe I should say something more along the lines of differential equations in spectral algebraic geometry. And I like to refer to it as SAG, spectral algebraic geometry. But I thought that since there's something of a mix of people here, maybe I should actually begin by saying something about how you do differential equations in classical algebraic geometry. So to start off with, I'm not going to number these sections, that's ridiculous. Differential equations in classical algebraic geometry, or CLAG as I like to call it. And the basic principle comes from the theory of D-modules. So maybe I'll say something about D-modules to start off with. So here's the basic idea. So let's suppose that I begin with, and actually, you know, for most of the talk, K is going to be a field of characteristic zero. Because if I make it a positive characteristic, I have to be smarter. So I start off with, let's just say, an affine n-space over K, and I write down a system of linear partial differential equations. See, Lij of uj is 0, and let's say, and there's I of them. So I've got some system of linear partial differential equations in the affine space, and I'm going to assume that the coefficients all sort of come from algebraic things. And let's say that I take this system and I perform some row and column operations on it. So I do that. So I get sum over j of Lij prime. You probably shouldn't use prime when you talk about differential equations, but never mind. Uij equals 0. And so this is a new system of partial differential equations. But in some sense, it's not a new system at all. It's just the same old system, just written relative to a different basis. So to make that precise, you just notice that there's, you know, if you take the ring of differential operators on AN, which is a nice vial algebra, there's a linear map like this, and these are just expressions of that linear map with respect to two different bases. So I can call this map L, let's say. And so, and from the point of view of solutions, there's no difference between these two things. So in other words, No. One of these is the index. This is the index for my I. This is how many I's I've got, and this is how many J's I've got. You can set up something that vaguely looks like a functor. So you can call this the solutions functor, if you like, associated to a differential equation star. And, well, what does it do? It goes from some collection of functions. Goes from the category of spaces of functions. Let me be vague about that just to start with, whatever I mean by that. And it associates to it, well, at least a k-vector space. Not much it does. And, you know, it's perfectly obvious what kind of construction it does, but what can actually fit in right here? Well, what can actually fit in here is anything on which these differential operators can actually act. That is to say, any module over this ring D. So I can think of this as a functor from the category of, let's say, right, because this is a non-commutative ring, right D modules to the category of K vector spaces. Okay, it's a perfectly reasonable functor. And, of course, sol of star is the same thing as sol of double star. You can confirm that pretty easily. And so there should be some notion that's sort of invariant under these kinds of things. And what you notice is that, I mean, this sol star for one of these D modules M here, what you notice is that it's nothing more than the kernel of some D linear map like this, right? Which can then be expressed as the kernel of some And what is this, I mean, where does this map come from? Let me tell you where this map comes from. It comes from the L that's just hidden here because I'm not short enough to use this board. And what does it do? It sends, but just by precomposition, you go from HOM from D plus N to M to HOM from D plus M into M. And you're taking the kernel of something like this. So it's, I mean, what I'm trying to get around to is that this functor is actually co-represented by the co-kernel of the map L. Okay, maybe that's already clear enough. So sol star and also sol double star is co-represented by the co-kernel of my L as a functor. Okay, so this is the classical motivation for the study of D modules. Now, in the example that I cited, it's a particularly easy example because it's just, you know, affine N space. But all this stuff is very sheafy. So you can now work instead if you've got some reasonable algebraic variety over K, actually any algebraic variety whatsoever, you can now get what I'll call DX over K, which is, so to say, the sheaf of germs of partial differential operators. The sheaf of germs of partial differential operators, and you can study modules over that. And I mean, just for the purposes of this talk, I'm only going to talk about right modules. I'm not going to ever talk about left modules. And I have a reason for that, but I'm not going to tell you right now what it is. So this is the sheaf of germs of differential operators, and then you can study modules over that. And this is a good sort of algebraization of the theory of linear partial differential equations. So we study, this is going to be the object of study for a little while. So there it is. This is a nice abelian category. And I think it's a good idea to think of this as, in some sense, a categorification of OX. So this is a categorification of OX. See, it doesn't matter how bad your spelling is if you write sloppily enough. So this is a categorification of OX. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm not going to be real specific. I can be if you want. But I mean, OX is a ring, so it should be replaced, if you're going to categorify, it should be replaced with some symmetric monoidal category, which preferably in this case is additive, in this case abelian even. I haven't told you what the symmetric monoidal structure is. That's because it's subtle, and I'm not going to talk about that at all, at least not yet. But there is in fact a tensor product, which is called tensor upper shriek, at least when X is smooth, and when X is not smooth, you have to be a little more creative. So this is a nice thing. And it's, there's another blackboard in here, I'm sure of it. There it is. So this is a nice thing to study, and it's nice in particular because it's functorial. So if you've got a quasi-finite map of algebraic varieties, or you could do this more generally, but I don't care, of quasi-finite algebraic varieties or schemes, then there's a nice functor called F upper shriek, which goes, and it's upper shriek because I'm doing the right theory as opposed to the left theory, from right D modules for X to right D modules for Y. This is a nice functor. So there's some two interesting facts. So if F is, let's see, finite, then this guy actually has a left adjoint. So let me just write that down. Dx over K. So this is my left adjoint here, which I call F lower shriek. Mod R dy over K. And if F is etal, it has the other adjoint. So this is F upper shriek. Then it's got the other, don't make me write this again, so if f is a tall, then there's an f lower star, which is on the other side of this guy. Okay. So, and so that's the story. I mean, if you wanted to get functoriality in something that in maps that weren't quasi-finite, you'd have to pop out of this category and you'd be moving into some sort of derived category. But for now, let's just think about these guys. If I should say one more thing, if F is in addition an open immersion, then in fact this F upper shrink here is exact. So that's a nice fact as well. And it is a little bit relevant for what I'm going to say. Okay, so here's sort of the first real theorem of the theory of D-modules, which is called Kashiwara's theorem. So by the way, I mean, I guess people usually say names with these things. So I mean, I should say that this whole business of sort of algebraizing this part of analysis is due to Saito and Sato and Kashiwara. And those are sort of the original names in the subject. And what Kashiwara's theorem says, it says really two things. So let's assume for the moment that Y and X are smooth. And let's say that we've got a closed immersion. I guess I've been doing from Y into X, haven't I? All right, so from Y into X, which I'll call I. Okay. The first part of the theorem says that this functor I lower shriek, which I've told you about, which exists, is fully faithful. But the theorem does even better than that. It tells you a second part, which says that you can characterize the essential image. So the essential image of I lower shriek is, it's the modules M consists of, maybe I'll say it that way, consists of the modules M such that J upper shriek of M is 0, where J here is the inclusion of the complement. So I guess that's X minus Y now, going into Y. So I call these the D modules that are set theoretically supported on the image of this guy. Okay, so there's two statements here. So this is really kind of a beautiful story. I mean, so in addition, it's a categorification of OX. In addition, I mean, I should say this. You've got we've got these pullback functors. So this actually defines a pre-sheaf in abelian categories on schemes over K with quasi-finite morphisms. And I mean, I need some conditions on these. Not very many. Quasi-compact and quasi-separated is actually enough. To the category of abelian categories, and this is actually a sheaf. So this is a theorem. This is a sheaf of abelian categories. Or a stack of abelian categories, if you like that terminology better. So this is a nice theorem, in that sense, it's very much like OX. It's got the sheafy property. These instead of ideals now, you have something slightly different. Instead of working with ideals for closed subvarieties, you have instead these kind of Serre subcategories that sit inside the abelian category of D modules. Oh, I'm sorry for the etale topology. Sorry. So this is all very nice, but there's one little problem here. The one outlier in all this is that I've sort of had to assume that X and Y are smooth up here, and the question is, well, you know, how big of a restriction is that? And it turns out how important a condition is that? And it turns out it's a really very important condition. So let me give an example to show how really bad this is. This is my favorite example. I'm going to let Z be the affine cone on the Fermat curve. So the Fermat curve is given by this equation, and Z is given by this equation in A3 as well. And now what you can show is that the embedding of Z, so this is, I mean, by the way, this is a normal Gorenstein scheme. It's like got an isolated singularity. You know, it kind of looks like this. I mean, it's a harmless singularity, really, from one point of view at least. However, the embedding of Z into A3 over K is fails to satisfy Kashibara's theorem. And you can actually see this quite easily because you can actually write down explicitly. By the way, this is not my example. This is due to Bernstein, Gelfand, and Gelfand from the 70s. You can actually write down explicitly an ascending chain of two-sided ideals that doesn't terminate. And there's nothing really special about this cubic. I could have written down another cubic and the same thing would have happened. So the situation is quite bad because, you know, from one point of view, this is not that bad a singularity. I mean, it's normal Gorenstein. It's a good singularity from one point of view. But from another point of view, the ring of differential operators on this guy is not right Noetherian. So there's no way it's going to embed into the category of differential the category of modules over is going to embed into the category of right modules over this guy. So we're in kind of bad shape from this point of view. So that's kind of bad. I mean, what actually happened there? Well, from one point of view, what actually happened was that you tried to contract points that were far away from one another. I mean, in forming the singularity, you sort of contracted points that were far away from one another. If you'd contracted points that were infinitesimally close, if you'd introduced a pinch, this thing wouldn't have happened. So in particular for sort of cuspidal-type singularities, this doesn't happen. You don't run into these same kind of problems. And this is now where I'm using the fact that I'm talking about right D modules and not left D modules, because if you introduce a cusp, you still don't have left Noetherianness necessarily, but you'll always get right Noetherianness if you're just introducing a cusp. That's sort of a quirky thing about the right business. Okay, so how do we deal with this? Well, the first answer is, I don't care about this. I don't want to deal with this. This is, you know, a singularity I'm not interested in. I'm only interested in smooth varieties, and that's all I really care about. Well, if you're interested in moduli of those smooth varieties, then Max gave a lovely talk, and I don't see Max here anymore. Oh, there he is. Hi, Max. Max gave this lovely talk where he described this sort of induction procedure. And the key thing to the induction procedure is that you have this ability to degenerate. And these kinds of degenerations, you can't always force them to be cuspidal. There are certain kinds of problems where you actually want nodal-type singularities or singularities where you're identifying points that are far away from one another. So it's actually, even if you're only interested in smooth things, if you're interested in the moduli of smooth things, if you're interested in, for example, a moduli stack of smooth varieties with certain kinds of differential equations attached to them, then you can achieve the kind of degenerations that you'd like to achieve in order to get the kind of inductive structure that Max told us about. So how do we deal with this? Well, let me describe method one for coping. And this is a little strategy I like to call defining deviancy down. Is that nobody under the age of 30 laughed at that joke? So defining deviancy down. The idea is that you don't accept at all that Kashiwara's theorem can fail. Kashiwara's theorem must always be true. It's much more important than working with the ring of differential operators. And so the only thing we care about is that Kashiwara's theorem must always be true. So we just define for Z embedded in some smooth guy the category of D modules, which I guess I have to now put in quotes, because it's not really the category of modules over D, as what it should be. Please. I don't even know what that is. What is that thing anyway? So you're supposed to define this thing as the full subcategory that we said it was supposed to be, as the category of modules set theoretically supported on the image. So as, I didn't give it a name, so as the category of modules on DX over K set theoretically supported on Z. So you just force that to be the case. This is now your definition. It's kind of a weak definition because, well, a priori it depends on the embedding. Turns out it doesn't. That's the theorem. You might destroy functoriality. It turns out you can get around that, but again, that's a theorem. And it's, it just seems a little ad hoc. And there's yet another problem with it, is that it still doesn't really... it doesn't give you a sufficiently conceptual answer for what the category of D modules actually is. I mean, you've just sort of seen some theorem that you've decided you must be true at all costs, and you sort of forced this to be the case. Okay? And I mean, in some sense, it's an unsatisfactory answer, and I mean, I can be even more precise. If you accept this as your definition, you actually can't get very far with the theory of D modules. I mean, this conference is all about working with stacks and higher stacks and algebraic spaces and so forth. And there's actually kind of a lot of difficulty in actually getting a good theory, especially when we move to the drive category, on algebraic stacks. It can be done, at least for nice things. I guess what I know is that constructions like these will work for algebraic stacks with affine diagonals, so algebraic stacks that are one geometric in Beltran's sense. Maybe it's possible to do it more generally, but it's not really a tenable solution. So in this talk, all I'm going to do is actually, there's only one idea in the whole talk. Here it is. And this is method two for coping, which is to use an old theory due to Grothendieck called crystals. And in fact, I'm actually going to use the Verdier duals to them, which I call D crystals. And I actually didn't call them that. Bernstein, Balanson, and Drinfeld called them that. So the alternative is the theory of D crystals, which I'll define. And what we'll see is that, you know, once I've written down this definition, it's going to be pretty clear how to generalize it to virtually any kind of geometric object that's worth studying. And so that's going to give us a hint of how to proceed into spectral algebraic geometry, which I'll get to, hopefully. All right, so what are D crystals? So first I have to tell you what the infinitesimal site is. So I want to talk about the infinitesimal site of the variety X over K. And it's just a site that's defined in the following way. And so, I mean, by the way, there's room for wiggling, I'll explain. So the objects are going to be diagrams that look like this. Nope, they don't look like that. They look like this. Where this, I'm going to say, is quasi-finite, any quasi-finite map. And this is a nilimer. So these are the objects. The morphisms are just exactly what you think they are. And I always draw that map the wrong way. I don't know why. They're just diagrams that look like this. It's a commute in the opposite. And so this is the site. I've said quasi-finite here. For the resulting theory of D crystals, it doesn't matter much. I can write et al. I can write Zariski open immersion. I can write smooth. They're all going to provide the same answer at the end of the day. So I have a lot of flexibility here. I'm writing quasi-finite down because that's what's going to give you the nicest possible functoriality. But it actually does not matter. So now I'm already ready. I can tell you exactly what the Abelian category of D crystals is once I've told you something about sort of a baby version of Verdier duality. So baby Verdier duality. And the baby part means that I'm only working with quasi-finite maps. So there's still only going to be functoriality in quasi-finite maps. And instead of using something like the Nagata compactification theorem, I'm going to use the Zariski main theorem to get the factorizations I want. So what do I mean? So if f from x to y is quasi-finite, I just want to tell you what f upper shriek from the category of OY modules to the category of OX modules. And when I say OY modules or OX modules or D modules, I'm always assuming they're quasi-coherent as OX modules. Right? That's sort of a standing assumption. It will always be true in this entire talk. So I want to define this guy. And by Zariski's main theorem, it's enough to tell you what it is for F et al. And what it is for F finite. So for F et al., I'll just define it by saying that F upper shriek is equal to F upper star. And for F finite, well, in the same way that we had wherever it was here, we have a similar result here, namely that what you notice is that when you look at, what am I trying to say? when you look at F lower shriek from quasi-coherent modules on X to quasi-coherent modules on Y, see, I've gone from X to Y now. That's why I'm confused. This thing, of course, has its usual left adjoint, but it also has a right adjoint, which we define as F upper shriek. Okay, so this is the exact map, and you just show that there's such a thing out there. And now you might complain, well, you know, you've told me what it is for each piece, and so I know how to glue them, but, you know, how do we know that there's not a problem with functoriality again? And once again, there's a trick for getting around it. Basically, you look at the category of factorizations, and you show that it's not too messy. You've got a good enough structure the category of factorizations does so that you don't have a problem. Okay, so that's my baby Verdier duality, and that's enough to give us an abelian category of D crystals. This is the best eraser of all. You don't think that because it's real small, but it's the best eraser of all. Yeah, I'm sorry. I called it a site and I never gave it a topology. Yeah, I'm always thinking about the Atal site. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So what do I mean? Actually, maybe I should even say something since I skipped it. I mean the Atal topology, but what do I mean by the Atal topology? I've got a forgetful functor from int over k to schemes over k, where I send an object s comma t, one of these gadgets, to t, not to s. It's critical. And I pull back the Atal topology along this. That's the thing. It's not S, so I thanks for pointing that out. I should have asserted that. Okay, great. Right, so now I've got baby Verdier duality. So that actually gives me a functor, a pseudo functor, if you like, which I like to call mod upper shriek of O. I don't know what you call it. Maybe just mod upper shriek. Read the right of anything. And what does it do? It goes from schemes with quasi-finite morphisms over K to, well, again, abelian categories. To any X, it assigns the category of quasi-coherent OX modules. And to any F, it just assigns F upper shriek. This is a good thing. You can even show that this also satisfies descent. This is also a stack of abelian categories. So it's a reasonable thing to look at. And then the category of D crystal this is this. And now I'm going to precompose it with this forgetful functor that I've got here. So I've got the infinitesimal site over K. I've got this forgetful functor, and now I go into abelian categories like this. And so this whole thing, if we look at the Cartesian sections of this sheaf of abelian categories, that's what I'm going to define to be the category of D crystals. And I guess I'll stop writing int on X over K. So these are the Cartesian sections of this diagram, which is the same thing as saying it's just the homotopy limit. So if I call this, say, pi for projection, and I'll write something like mod upper, pi upper star of mod upper shriek. How about that? That looks good. So the homotopy limit where you think of the usual model category and the category of categories. Okay, so this is a nice thing. And so now here's a theorem. So far, it doesn't look anything at all like the theory of D modules. Before I was talking about differential operators and modules over those. It doesn't have any semblance whatsoever to the typical theory. So now here's a theorem, which is due to Balanson and Drinfeld. And I'll put it all in one theorem, but it's really two theorems. The first theorem that is that if X is smooth, then the category of D crystals on X over K is canonically equivalent to the category of right D modules on X. So if X is smooth, we think this is the right guy, and the D crystals give us the same thing. Two, Kashiwara's theorem is always true. This is quite remarkable. Before, we had this sort of ad hoc technique of defining deviancy down, And now, what we've done is just by doing kind of a slightly formal construction involving this wonderful infinitesimal site, we've got something where Cacciari's theorem is just true, always. So by the way, notice that, I mean, you know, everyone in this room, I think, can now produce exactly the same thing for any algebraic stack, right? Because I told you that I could just replace this with the word smooth and there would be no problem. Everyone can also do this for any algebraic space, I think, with absolutely no effort whatsoever. This all works in the same generality. The problem is, of course, that I'm restricted in terms of my functoriality only to quasi-finite maps, which is a little bit inconvenient. Did you have a question? Are you? Oh, okay. Which is a little bit inconvenient. So how do we repair the functoriality to get it to work for everything? Well, in order to repair the thing, repair it to get to work for everything. Oh, so by the way, maybe I should say, yeah, maybe I'll say one more part of this theorem, which is also important. Because I am talking about categorification here, I do want a Sheafy type property, which is that Chris, upper shriek, going from schemes over K, quasi-finite, to, with only quasi-finite maps, I mean, to abelian cat, this is also a sheaf of abelian categories. Okay, so the connecting maps here are just given by site restriction, which you can always get. However, the site restriction doesn't work so well if you're working with stacks, right? Because, you know, quasi-finite maps are stacks. So, but as long as you're working with schemes, there's no problem here, and this is actually a nice sheaf. Pardon? Yeah, a stack of abelian cat. I mean, that satisfies descent with respect to the Atal topology in the appropriate sense. If I say sheaf, I always mean stack. Because everything is, I mean, everything's really a stack. So, okay, so how do I get this to work? To get me functoriality for more interesting things than just quasi-finite gadgets. For that, I'm going to need the full-strength Faraday duality, which maybe I'll just assume in the interest of time, which is waning. And in fact, it's not actually any harder to tell you how it works for spectral algebraic geometry than it is to tell you how it works for classical algebraic geometry. It turns out it's not any more difficult whatsoever. So let me at least say a few words about spectral algebraic geometry, and then I'll tell you what I propose is the good theory of differential equations in spectral algebraic geometry, and I'll ask some questions mostly, and I'll state a couple conjectures, and maybe even one theorem. Spectral algebraic geometry, and I'm thinking, I mean, okay, so let me, so I'm going to let A be the model category, or the infinity category, if you like those better. I don't, I mean, they're going to be more or less the same for this entire talk, of, let's say, gamma spaces, or really of any model for connective spectra that you like. I'm not really particular about the whole thing. And now I want to look at the category of E-infinity algebras in A, with respect to the Barrett-Eccles operad, if you like the Barrett-Eccles operad. I'm not real particular. This is not quite a model category. This is a semi-model category. But from the infinity categorical point of view, nobody minds. And then the point is that you want to do algebraic geometry where you've replaced the category of rings with this guy. Right? That's sort of what spectral algebraic geometry is supposed to do. And I'm only interested, notice I'm only interested in the connective version of everything. I don't really care about non-connective phenomena just yet. Because I think, well, I just don't have a good geometric understanding of those guys. And so we can consider pre-sheaves valued in infinity groupoids, which are the same thing as simplicial sets, on this model category. And that's, and then you try and do geometry with that, and you try and say things about geometricity and so forth and so on. So that's my 3-minute version of spectral algebraic geometry. It's a much more intense topic than I'm really laying on, but tough. Okay, so what do I propose to be the category of decrystals? Let me talk about that now. So what I need to do is I need to, if I'm going to imitate this, I need to give you a site, right, this infinitesimal site, and then it's going to be exactly the same formula here. I'm just going to tell you that it's the homotopy limit of some version of mod upper shriek, It's going to be exactly the same formula. So, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. You're right. I should be working. I'll work over HK. That's all that. That's right. So if I work over, okay, I'll talk about that maybe at the end. So I'm actually working with, yeah. So I'm actually going to be always working with E infinity algebras over HK for the purposes of this. Yeah, K is any characteristic zero field. The conventions are erased, but yeah. And I don't care much about it. So, yeah, so let me define now. Let me first just do it for affines, because affines are easy enough. So, I mean, the site looks exactly the same. If I've got some affine, then I ask for, you know what, I might as well just do it in general. So if I've got any f and arhom from this infinity category, this implicit set. There's a good notion of quasi-coherent modules over this thing. Do I need to define it? What a quasi-coherent S module is? There's a good notion of a module over any ring in this, so that means that there's also a good notion of quasi-coherent F module. So basically, let me just call this F over HK, if you don't mind. So we've got a nice functor to the category of infinity 1 categories, which is just modules, but here I take as my connecting maps the upper star. And now this embeds by the Yoneda embedding into arhom from F over HK op into the category of simplicial sets. These are the infinity groupoids, if you like. So this is the Yoneda embedding. And now I just take, well, I need to do op here and op here. So I do the right con extension in the homotopy sense of this guy. So that produces a good functor here. And these are the quasi-coherent OX modules. This assigns to anything a quasi-coherent OX module. By the way, notice that, you know, I'm using this homotopy limit construction all over the place. I mean, here there's sort of course, a hidden homotopy limit construction. I won't erase that, because baseball is important. There's a hidden homotopy limit construction. And, you know, the one question is, well, you know, all these things come from nice model categories. If you take the homotopy limit of a bunch of infinity categories that come from model categories, can you find a model for it? And the answer is actually yes, but not quite as a model category, only as a semi-model category. So basically, you're doing a right Gauss field localization to a model category that isn't right proper. And that only produces a right semi-model category. So, but these things exist. The point is that you can work explicitly with models here, which is quite nice. Okay, so now, suppose that we've got a geometric stack in the sense of Toen-Vazassi and Hag 2, say. And I just want to be able to tell you, first of all, what this infinitesimal site is. And this is, I mean, again, this is over HK. And I want to tell you what the infinitesimal site is. And it's going to be exactly the same thing. I'm going to allow myself but I'm only going to allow affines coming down. So I'm going to allow some spec A coming down, and then some nil immersion into some spec B. These are the objects. The morphisms are exactly what they have to be. You might be concerned that I'm just writing this down as though if it were an ordinary category, but you can write this thing down in a categorical sense, and it'll be okay. Yeah? Yeah, I include affine diagonal. Yeah. What's that? Oh, but I meant that it's geometric for just n geometric for any n, or geometric. Yes. Yeah. So I have to say zero geometric now. All right. Bye. Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, and so the what was I doing here? Oh right, I was doing this task. Okay, so and now once again I can just sort of lift my atal topology from the forgetful functor down to affines over HK just by going down to spec B, forgetting only everything else and only remembering spec B. So this now gives me a forgetful functor, call it pi, from x int to now, what should I call them, stacks over HK. And I don't even, I mean, I guess I'm going down to affines over HK even. So that's fine, too. The transition maps between what and what?
In your previous discussion, the functionality was with respect to upper shriek.
Right. I haven't defined mod upper shriek yet.
Okay.
But there is a mod upper shriek, which I'll now say. Thank you. right. So there's a mod upper shriek now, which, I mean, I should actually sit here and tell you how Verdier duality works in the spectral world, but I'm not going to just yet. There's a mod upper shriek which goes to infinity one categories, and it sends any affine x to OX modules, and it sends f to f upper shriek. And I mean, basically, the way I'm constructing f upper shriek here, I mean, I should just say, I mean, it's the same kind of story as I've done repeatedly, except that now I'm factoring my morphisms, and then I'm showing that there are adjoints on either side. And then I'm gluing those together to get an f upper shriek. And then I have to show that actually that doesn't depend on which choice of gluing those things together that I chose. You look unhappy. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I do need something. When I'm talking about affines, yeah, I need some conditions on the affines. So let's see, what do I need? I guess I need, these should all be finitely presented over HK at least. Do I need more than that? I don't think I need more than that. I think that should be sufficient. That's definitely sufficient. Since I'm only working with connective things, a nilpotent extension for me is not going to be anything other than a nilpotent extension on the pi zeros. I mean, I'm treating all the derived stuff as according to Jacob as all the stuff in higher degrees as fuzz, as nilpotent fuzz, just as higher derived nilpotent fuzz. So I mean, I only care about what happens on pi zero. Okay, so right, so now I've got a good category of D crystals, because I can just take the homotopy limit of pi upper star of this mod upper shriek gadget here. So now I define my category of D crystals on, and I guess I've called the stack script DX, as just the homotopy limit of pi upper star of this mod upper shriek functor, which I haven't told you much about, but it's out there, and it extends the classical one, at least over K. Okay, so now this is what I hope to be a good instance of. This is my proposal for the category of D modules, at least for characteristic zero. So this is my proposal for the category of D modules. This is a nice infinity category. I can even get it as a semi-model category using the kind of strictification theorem I described. And let me say a few words about it. So here's some pleasant facts about it. It's a stable, well, if I use stable modules, it's a stable category. I guess I should have used stable modules the whole time. I suppose I should really be using stable modules here in order for me to get stable. So these should really be stable modules so that I've got, I mean, the functor still exists, but I wanted stable. You don't want stable? Stable in the sense that actually in your sense, I think. Stable in the sense that, actually semi-stable should be enough. Sorry. Yeah, no, this is okay. I'll let that stand. I'll let it stand as it is. No, it's all right. I don't need to. No, I'm being stupid. I'm sorry. So the facts are that this is a nice infinity category. It's additive in an appropriate sense that it's semi-stable. This is an additive semi-stable infinity category, which is very nice. The second fact that I want to say is that if x comes from is h lower shriek of some, let's see, y, where y is just an ordinary Artin stack with affine diagonal, then this category of d crystals of x over hk is equivalent to the category that, well, the Hammock localization of the category of complexes of d crystals on x over on y over k. H lower shriek, I'm sorry. So H lower shriek of Y. So using the Eilenberg-MacLane functor, any classical algebraic stack can be pushed forward to a geometric stack in the sense of spectral algebraic geometry. And that functor is H lower shriek. Okay. Oh, I think I just mean that what am I trying to say? Yeah, I mean connective stable, so I guess what I mean is that the suspension functor is fully faithful. Right, okay, I said that right. Is that not what people call semi-stable? Is that... I don't know whether I made that up or whether I heard someone else say that. Okay, so I've gone to all this trouble to define this big infinity category. And so a good question is, there's maybe one more fact that's very nice, and it's a fact that doesn't make any sense whatsoever unless I work with infinity categories. I mean, a lot of this doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but this fact is especially relevant. So you consider Chris upper shriek, let's just restrict it to affines for the moment, as a functor from affines over HK to the category of infinity one categories. Then this actually satisfies descent with respect to the Atal topology. This satisfies Atal descent. So these are local objects. Also, there's a version of Kashivara's theorem, except that I actually only know the version of Kashivara's theorem that I want to use in the case where my thing comes from an affine, or maybe just a little more general. I don't know it for arbitrary stacks. So, but there's definitely a version of Kashivara's theorem that's true. So Kashivara is true, at least for affine. So as long as, and I think also for Deline-Mumford stacks in Jacob's sense. Derived Deline-Mumford stacks, I mean. Where are you? Here? This assertion? Yeah, the version of Kashivara's theorem I mean is that if you've got a closed embedding, I'll write it this way. So if you've got a closed embedding I, then I lower shriek is fully faithful from, there's an I lower shriek functor, which I haven't said anything about, but there's an I lower shriek functor from crystals to crystals, d crystals. And the two parts are still the same. So this is fully faithful in the sense of infinity categories. And the second part is that you can characterize the essential image.
But then you can,
Right, yes. Right, exactly. So that's exactly how you prove it too. That's exactly right. So I mean that's the point, is that somehow the nilpotent fuzz is not contributing anything here. So this works out okay. So you can characterize these things as the things that are sort of set theoretically supported on X. So set theoretic support. Okay. What do I intend to do with this? So let me describe a couple of things that I think, you know, are at least interesting questions. And maybe ask whether it's reasonable to expect this. So one thing I can do, so there's the theory of chiral algebras, which is basically establishing on the category of right D modules on a curve, establishing a pseudo-tensor category structure, and then working with what are called least R algebras inside that pseudo-tensor category. And the same thing can actually be done here, provided that everything is smooth. And what you get is something that's called a multi-infinity category, or we call it a multi-infinity category. So Margaret Spitzek and I developed the notion of a multi-infinity category. And it turns out that if you take the category of D crystals on X, and again, I'm going to assume now that X is somehow Deline-Mumford over HK and smooth, then this thing can actually has the multi-infinity category structure. So in particular, you can set up using this the homotopy theory of chiral algebras that's discussed in Baylinson and Drunfeld's book. And now it becomes very cartoony because I don't really understand physics very well, but at least this is what's asserted in Baylinson and Drunfeld's book, that the, so to speak, that the chiral homology, which is now easy to construct because we have a full-fledged homotopy theory, the chiral homology is in some sense, or maybe I should say the whole, classically it's the holomorphic sector of the space of conformal blocks. I only have a cartoony understanding of this, so I can't say that I really know what that means, but one thing that I do understand is that, I mean, I understand this part of it. I don't necessarily understand this part of it. So here's a question for people who really understand these things. Is there any sense in which the following can possibly be true? So, I mean, as far as I understand by the sort of philosophy of Siegel, there's an association between the between conformal field theories and cohomology theories of telescopic complexity too. So is there a universal, and I'll put that in quotes, chiral algebra over spec E for some E of telescopic complexity too? In particular for these two K theories that of Bastundas and Rognes, is there any sort of universal chiral algebra living over that thing? And then would its chiral homology have anything to do with more of the space of conformal blocks, the WZW space of conformal blocks? But I mean, I don't necessarily know exactly what should be true here, so it's a vague question. But it's I'd like to put it out there as a question for those of you who really know your physics. The other thing that I think is far more interesting, and maybe I'll just finish with this, is just a brief remark about geometric Langlands. So, actually, Bertrand Tohen notes in his Seattle notes something very interesting about these things. If we have a, I guess it's usually set up with a smooth projective curve. And we take some kind of derived category on on the stack of G bundles on XDR, and we should be getting a correspondence between that and the derived category of D modules in some appropriate sense. And so in this case, of course, since I'm thinking of D crystals, I'm going to write Chris for Shriek on have I got this right? No, I don't. On the I'll fix it in a sec. On the category of the Langlands dual bundles on X. Sorry, I meant loc here. And now this statement, as written here, makes perfect sense regardless of what dimension X is. That's the thing that this is the only thing I wanted to point out, was that it's actually independent of the dimension of X. Up until now, I don't think there was any reasonable statement that you could write down that made any sense unless X was a curve. But now this statement makes perfect sense for X any dimension whatsoever. The question is there any hope of such a correspondence to exist? I can also write down the Hecke operations. Maybe I won't do that. But it's also possible to write down Hecke operations for these in an appropriate sense. And one can ask whether, again, Hecke eigen sheaves correspond to skyscraper sheaves on the other side. Maybe one more comment about this. I mean, Tillan also remarks in the same remarks in the Seattle notes, he remarks about the characteristic variety of the D module. There is a notion of a characteristic variety here. It's the same thing as what's called the micro support of the category of the space of solutions. And that naturally lives on the derived tangent stack of this thing. So, I mean, there is a suitable thing here that could exchange the sort of stackian derived directions in a suitable sense. But again, I mean, I ask experts on Langlands and other things whether there's any hope for something like this to be true. So these are the two questions that I really hope someone's going to answer for me, or at least tell me it's impossible. And I think I'll stop here. Thank you. Yeah? Pardon? Do I know how Riemann-Hilbert works in this space? No, I don't. I don't really know exactly how perverse sheaves should work in this context, so I don't really have a... Oh, I see. So it sounds like Jacob understands Riemann-Hilbert. I think it's like, so let's see, you're saying that the... No, actually I'm confused. What's insensitive to the higher homotopy groups?
We're trying to point it out that if you have one of these infinity algebras A, and the second I naught of A, there's a closed immersion of
right.
A.
Right. Right. So then you just recover the classical version of Riemann-Hilbert. Sure. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So in a sense, I mean, and since I've done too much work, right? I mean, in a sense, I could have just said, you know, always work with just pi zero, and that works out fine. But I guess the interesting fact is that actually does produce the right answer. I mean, if you construct things in this way, that still produces the right answer. So the naive version where you just sort of take pi zero and work with those things, work with d-crystals on those things, provides the right answer with this fancier construction that I wrote down. Yes?
Just to go back to the
They're more smooth. Well, this is actually a point of contention for me. I mean, the notion of hidden smoothness, at least, I mean, and people who are really experts on this should tell me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is that I mean, for example, if you take the derived moduli stack of vector bundles, which is the example that I'm most familiar with, on something that's not a curve, that isn't really smooth. It's really just an LCI scheme, really. So it's not really hidden smoothness that you're buying. It's really something like hidden quasi-smoothness or hidden LCI-ness. Kashuvaris, you saw, what I wrote down before, this example that I wrote down wasn't, mean, it was a complete intersection, but it still didn't satisfy Kashiwara's theorem. So I don't think you could expect a more naive construction to. I'm not sure if I'm actually answering your question anymore. I don't think you could expect a naive construction to produce that just because there are more smooth things hanging around or more LCI things hanging around. Pardon? That satisfies Kashiwara's theorem? Or does it only do so for filtered guys? This is actually something that I wanted to talk to you about. Yeah. I'd like to know, because if you have a nice construction for that's sort of at a lower level than this, that would be nice, because I mean one of the obvious failures of this is that it's not very concrete. It's a pretty abstract. Everything is sort of done in abstraction. You can't really work explicitly with differential equations the way you'd like to. So that's a drawback. Yeah. Yeah. So this is right. So I think what is my opinion now about that? My opinion now is that I think they're equivalent. However, this is actually an ongoing discussion we've had. But there's another version, of course, where I can replace Chris with a star, and that evidently that also satisfies the same version of Kashiwara's theorem that this thing satisfies. So, and for smooth things, we know they correspond to the classical notion. So it certainly looks like there's an equivalence between these two things, but I don't understand the mechanism of the equivalence. I don't understand what... I can't get a functor in either direction that's really sensible for arbitrary schemes or stacks or anything. Derived schemes or stacks or anything. So I think it's true, but I don't know really why. In some sense.
Okay, that's